You were born here. You didn't choose that. You didn't choose to support South Africa. It was just a kind of happenstance of where you happen to be.
Here's the thing. It's called unconditional love. Okay, you're going to the root of our purpose in life. Yeah, it's getting hectic, okay?
Mark, hi, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. After a weekend that if you didn't watch out, you could find yourself glued to the television for the amount of sport that was thrust upon us, might I say.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Why do you think sport is important?
Well, particularly in the South African context, there are three reasons why I think it's important. I'll give you examples of each. First of all, it requires common purpose. Spain beat England last night
right. In
the European Cup final, okay? And Spain beat them because they played a better team game. And there seemed to be less prima donnas and more team people in sport. So sport requires, first of all, common purpose. The second thing that sport brings out in all of us, I think, is national pride.
Right.
Okay, so you have an extraordinary affiliation. People stand there singing the national anthem, those of us who've still got to master it and so on. And then there's finally an undisputed set of rules. Okay, those are the three components that make sport work. There are rules. Now, you can watch a game of rugby and you can go, oh, come on, man, he hardly touched him. Or you can watch a game of soccer and go, did he actually touch him? But there are rules, and the rules are rules. And in tennis, you can watch, and if there's an argument about the replay, they show you where the ball landed, it's in or out. There's not a discussion after that. It's not. So common purpose, national pride, and undisputed rules.
Okay. That's very interesting. But I would say there's downsides too to the idea of sport. First of all, it's
Christ's effort. You have to get out of bed. We don't like that. Yeah. Okay.
No, the first thing is that it's, you know, it's a bit pointless. You know, if you're just being honest about it. Because, you know,
if it's pointless, then it's called a draw. Okay.
But, you know, from this perspective of the planet Earth, right? I remember I stayed in England a long time ago. And when I got there, I thought, well, I should follow the soccer. I followed the soccer and it was a big thing. And it finally came to the end of the season and Chelsea won and everybody. And then 6 weeks later, it started again. You know, what was that? I was like, okay, what was that about? The second argument against sport is that the nationalism is completely false.
Yeah, I agree.
You are South African because you were born here.
Yeah.
You didn't choose that. It wasn't your choice. You didn't choose, you know, to support South Africa. It was just a kind of happenstance of where you happen to be.
Yeah.
But you know, where I do agree with you is I like the idea of what sport teaches, you know, about sort of concentration and effort. And, you know, I would be lying if I said that I don't get caught up in it like everybody else. Still, I think there is an argument against sport that people don't think about enough.
Well, I agree with you, particularly in the professional age where people are turning their backs on all of that national pride and starting to chase another universal thing called money. Okay, but having said all of that, I can't accept that, you know, all things are given to you at birth are things you shouldn't support. By your argument, you know, I'm born in South Africa, so why the hell should I support South Africa? Well, I'm born to parents and have progeny. Should I not naturally feel a love for them? Okay. And you're like, well, it's just your parents. I mean, what? That you got born to them. It's not your fault that you're... Why don't you go and choose two other adults to go? And I'll tell you what the difference is. Okay, or you have children and you go like, yeah, but they're just my children. I mean, what the hell? I'll go choose someone, you know, that I like more. Okay, no, it doesn't work like that. And here's the thing. It's called unconditional love. Okay, you're going to the root of our purpose in life. Yeah, Tim, this is getting hectic, okay? So you're born with, in national terms, you can reject that love and go away. But we are born with natural affiliations, and those affiliations look after us as much as we look after them. So I think there is a bit more depth to this thing than just being able to sing the national anthem. And I've seldom seen such unity as you might find in a rugby stadium or another stadium, a unity of purpose or affiliation. And maybe it goes too far. Yeah. Yeah, our sport has got no universal impact on the planet. But then I might ask you, what does?
My argument is you know, I'm negated by the facts of the situation, you know, because my argument is sort of dead on arrival in a sense, because people have long ago made up their mind about this. They love sport and they follow it kind of completely religiously. But I would say, just, you know, just to be a little bit out there, that I do sort of wonder about whether it's a diversion, you know, whether you are concentrating on sport because you're not focusing on other aspects of your life or about the world or stuff like that. You know, I don't want to be a complete wet blanket, but obviously I am being a complete
I mean, for goodness sake, is the word, you know, is the second response that I have to that. And Aaron, what do you want us to focus on, Tim? I mean, sport is lekker, man. We go, we have a braai, we drink beer, and we shout and scream together, and it's two families, we all dress up funnily. And you said those follow sport religiously, which introduces another little theme there, you know, accidentally on purpose, okay? Because there's even a more questionable choice of allegiances when, you know, we get born into some faith and you adopt or reject that faith. So, Tim, this is way above my intellectual capacity for argument, and so I want to move back to the rugby field. Please, man. Okay. And might I ask you this? What are then more noble pursuits than sport? Since you've dissed our favorite thing in the world, what have you got to offer us to make us happy on a Saturday?
Well, I quite like knowledge. I like knowledge. I think knowledge is good. We should do more of that.
Oh, my God. All I can say is you're never going to get invited to a braai.
I quite like conversation.
Yeah.
Conversation's fine.
Yeah.
Developing skills. And, you know, actually, I don't mind making money. I mean, I think making money's fine. I think it would be very helpful if people made money around the world. So you sort of like scorn making money, but that's because you have made money.
No.
Lots of people out there are really struggling, and they're the ones we should be focusing on, not the booker in Durban.
Let's not get personal, but aren't we all looking for intersections with like-minded people, if you distill it? Okay.
Yeah.
And if we find that so easily in sport, and without little effort, then it's going to be popular because we are. We all want to be liked and loved and all of those good things and have causes and purposes. And so sport makes it so easy to find an affiliation. And I think that might be it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. But, you know, there's this argument that at roots, human beings are tribal entities, that we are sort of hardwired, if you like, to find a tribe. And that comes from centuries of self-defense against other tribes.
Survival.
And that what sport is, in fact, is a kind of sanitized
modern-day version of tribal warfare.
Yeah. Modern-day version of tribalism. And therefore, it's a good thing because at least we're not, you know, killing each other. It's a substitute. It's a displacement of tribal things. So I would argue against that. I would say, well, yeah, but human beings change. We should be changing. We should change for the new world out there in which tribalism is going to be less important, right? Because we live in a more global world, and that's a nice thing. It's nice to have, you know, friends in Australia and stuff.
Oh, you can sometimes pick your choices. It's nice to have friends. Why don't you just say it's nice to have friends in other countries? Why did you have to go and choose Australia? You could start a tribal war between us, yeah. You know,
I just thought I would get us going a little
bit. Put it out there. So you know, the difference between soccer and rugby is that the tribal warfare in soccer happens on the grandstands because they hardly touch each other on the field, whereas the tribal warfare in rugby happens on the field. Okay, and the crowd's usually quite well behaved. Anyway, just moving a bit from that theme to what sport does do. Sport is the manifestation of natural succession. When your time is up, you get beaten and you go. Okay, and I mean, that happened arguably to Djokovic yesterday when Alcaraz beat him in straight sets, and it was youth overcoming experience. You know, this question of when is your time up, you know, happens in sport naturally because it's a physical thing in some ways. And yet, you know, we celebrate and record statistics like, for example, that it was Djokovic's 37th final and he was 37 years old. We seem to record, you know, repetitive success as success in and of itself.
Right.
But there is a time limit to sport. Your time is up and you go. And then you go into the old people's league, but you go because you physically run out of competitive physical capacity. That doesn't happen in politics, it seems to me. Okay. So now, so
and other places,
and in business, but this
stamp
is
collecting
like
people just go on forever.
So you know, in politics, I was just looking it up a little bit. You know, we've got, you know, Paul Kagame is going for his fourth term in Rwanda. Xi Jinping has been in charge since 2013. Narendra Modi's been in charge since 2014 or something. Putin's been in charge for the last 25 years. Mm. And so the list goes on. And more than, I'd say, half the world's population is run by people who've been in charge for like 25 years.
Wow. That is an incredible statistic.
And a lot of them are in their 70s. Xi's 71, Narendra's 73, Putin's 71. And then we move across to the United States, and the average age of the two contenders is around, you know, 79 point something. So there's a difference in sport and politics. In sport, it's ability, and in politics, it's popularity or force.
Yes.
So there's something wrong. Tim, what do you think?
You know, we're talking, obviously, immediately after the attempt on former President Trump's life over the weekend, which the assassination narrowly missed. And, you know, it sort of struck me when I was reading about it yesterday and this morning. The one thing about politics which you really have to have is luck. And there's no one who demonstrates that more than Donald Trump. Because, you know, objectively speaking, I think if you were an honest Republican, you would say Trump is not a great candidate. But he's come up first against a sort of, you know, a kind of slightly assumptive candidate who he, you know, just beat. And now he's come up against a guy verging defective.
Old.
Old. Yeah. And then somebody tries to take him out, fires five shots, misses him, hits his ear. I mean, that is absolutely incredible. Yeah. As far as I saw, you know, one of the things I do is I follow the bookies and the markets, and the, you know, there's quite a lot of speculative markets around these days. And they all put Trump up immediately after the shooting. They all put him up about 10%.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I mean, there's nothing better than to be a living martyr.
Yes. No, exactly. Exactly. That's right.
To be a living martyr is the four aces of politics, okay? I mean, you can't do better than that in terms of your CV, okay? But having said that, I mean, it's kind of crazy because this shot was taken from 140 meters away by a guy, you know, in clear visibility of the rally, and he missed, okay? And so he's clearly not a professional sniper. I mean, they don't miss at 10 times that distance, okay?
Yep.
And so it was a huge combination of things. And I've also heard that it actually wasn't the bullet that hit his ear. It was a piece of, you know, some shrapnel from something it did hit. But, you know, real people died. The shooter.
Yes,
by the way,
right.
The shooter was executed there and then. Yeah. No trial, no nothing. And they just took him out. And that's okay with me if he's guilty. But I'm not, you know. I don't know. It's a mess. But I've absolutely no doubt it entrenched his prospects to be the next president. And he handled himself brilliantly afterwards, you know, going down with blood streaming out of his ears, shouting, fight them. And I mean, hello, it's too terrible. It's terrible. I think it's horrible, whichever way you look at it, man.
It's horrible from all kinds of points of view. President Biden has sort of said very, very diplomatically that, you know, we need to take the sort of temperature down a bit and all of that sort of stuff. The only problem is, in one of his discussions with donors, he did say that we should put a bullseye on Donald Trump.
You know, he didn't.
Yeah, he did. I mean,
that's conspiracy to murder. It's all getting out of hand.
I know. Here's also the demonstration that you need luck in politics, because he's just had lots of bad. He just became president when he was too old. It's a sad situation. You think he should stand down?
Yeah, absolutely.
Me too. Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, don't judge where he is now. Judge where he's got to be for the next 5 years.
Exactly.
You know, maybe he can sort of, you know, wander through the next couple of months and get away with it. But it points to a broader issue, which is the absence of alternatives. Okay. This is not about Trump and Biden. It's about the absence of alternatives.
Yeah.
It's about a population of 350 million can't do better than come up with some has-beens. And they're both has-beens. Have a nice day. They're both ex-presidents. And I say that with some foresight. And they've both been there for too long, and they're both too bloody old. And I mean, come on. And I don't know what motivates them to do it, other than, I guess, power and, I don't know, popular. I don't know. I think.
Oh, I know. I know what it is. I can tell you absolutely definitively what it is.
What is it?
It's the jet.
It's the jet. Okay, I knew it was you.
If you have to travel around the world on an aeroplane, and then all of a sudden you get the opportunity to go into your own aeroplane where you have a lounge and a drinks and a bed and...
God,
who wouldn't stick around for that?
But, you know, popularity is difficult to deal with. So few pop stars survive popularity, by the way. You know, I mean, you get a lot of early deaths and very sad people who were once rock stars because that popularity thing is difficult to deal with.
Right.
We've almost run out of time, but I would say this, that business, which has also got common purpose, which is, you know, increasing stakeholder wealth, whatever you define it as, has come up with some rules.
Yes.
Of succession and some time limits. And so again, you know, we do turn to business to learn about these things. I have a number, if you're ready for it.
Yeah, go for it. I've got a business number too, which I wanted to mention.
You go first.
All right. So I've got two numbers, one of which is, I just think that this is absolutely incredible. Do you think it's an achievement to be a billionaire, a dollar billionaire?
It's not something I would scorn if it fell upon me. Well, you know, it goes to the root of how you got there.
Yes. How many dollar billionaires are there in the US? I'll just tell you. It's 788.
Wow.
I mean, there are now basically 5.5 million dollar millionaires in the United States. Dollar millionaires. Remember when it was a big thing to be a millionaire? Now it's sort of like one
it's
out of...
It's still a big thing. No.
What is it? One out of...
I disagree. I think it's as rare as ever it was. You must look at the denominator as well as the numerator.
Of course.
I mean, the population has increased a little over that period of time. Okay. I think they're as rare as ever they were, but I haven't done the sums.
My bet is that this top end has never been as heavy.
Well, I don't know. If you said they're 5 million out of a total world population of 8 billion, that's hardly a big number. And, you know, the thing is that all of these things have become more visible to us and more, we know more than we did. But so my number is this. King Swati III has just taken on his 16th wife. Okay. And that's not news in and of itself. But the thing is that his 16th wife is Zuma's daughter.
Right.
21 years old. Okay.
Right.
And so I've got some friends who are married.
Okay.
Some of my best friends know people that are married.
Yes.
And they have enough trouble with one of each other. Okay. Yeah. So if you asked me whether having 16 or more of one another is, you know, is progress, I would argue not. Okay. So good luck to you guys, you polygamous people that can handle this kind. That's my number for the week.
Okay.
It's an interesting week. We've got Sona coming.
Yep.
We'll be listening to see whether GNU has made some first steps towards a new world. Should be fun.
It'll be interesting to see when they actually get down to the business of trying to govern this completely ungovernable place called South Africa.
Yeah.
They do.
Let's see what comes out of it.
Well,
okay. Next week.
Ta-ta.